Following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on November 15, 1993 in Sweden. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 10, Verse 4.
Cheerful attitude, the cow used to moisten the grazing ground with milk. Report by Srila Prabhupada. The basic principle of economic development is centered on land and cows. The necessity of human society are food, grains, fruits, milk, minerals, clothing, wood, etc. One requires all these items to fulfill the material needs of the body. Certainly one does not require flesh and fish or iron tools and machinery. During the regime of Maharaj Yudhishthira, all over the world there were regulated rainfalls. Rainfalls are not in the control of the human beings. The heavenly king Indradeva is the controller of the rains, and he is the servant of the Lord. When the Lord is obeyed by the king and the people under the king's administration, there are regulated rains from the horizon. And these rains are the causes of all varieties of production on the land. Not only do regulated rains help ample production of grains and fruits, but when they combine with astronomical influences, there is ample production of valuable stones and pearls. Grains and vegetables can sumptuously feed a man and animals. And the fatty cow delivers enough milk to supply a man sumptuously with vigor and vitality. If there is enough milk, enough grains, enough fruit, enough cotton, enough silk, and enough jewels, then why do the people need cinemas, houses of prostitution, slaughterhouses, etc.? What is the need of an artificial, luxurious life of cinema, cars, radio, flesh, and hotels? Has this civilization produced anything but quarreling individually and naturally? Has this civilization enhanced the cause of equality and fraternity by sending thousands of men into hellish factories and the war fields at the whims of a particular man? It is said here that the cows used to moisten the pasturing land with milk because their milk bags were fatty and the animals were joyful. Do they not require, therefore, proper protection for a joyful life by being fed with sufficient quantity of grass in the field? Why should men kill cows for their selfish purposes? Why should men not be satisfied with grains, fruits, and milk, which combined together can produce hundreds and thousands of palatable dishes? Why are there slaughterhouses all over the world to kill innocent animals? Maharaj Parikshit, grandson of Maharaj Yudhishthira, while touring his vast kingdom, saw a black man attempting to kill a cow. The king at once arrested the butcher and chastised him sufficiently. Should not a king or executive head protect the lives of the poor animals who are unable to defend themselves? Is this humanity? Are not the animals of a country citizens also? And why are they allowed to be butchered in organized slaughterhouses? Are these the signs of equality, fraternity, and nonviolence? Therefore, in contrast with the modern advanced civilized form of government, an autocracy like Maharaj Yudhisthira's is by far superior to a so-called democracy in which animals are killed and a man less than an animal is allowed to cast votes for another less than an animal man. We are all creatures of material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the Lord Himself is the seed-giving Father, and material nature is the mother of all living beings in all shapes. Thus, Mother Material Nature has enough foodstuff both for animals and for men. By the grace of the Father Almighty, Sri Krishna, the human being is the elder brother of all other living beings. He is endowed with intelligence more powerful than animals for realizing the course of nature and the indications of the Almighty Father. Human civilization should depend on the production of material nature without artificially attempting economic development. To turn the world into a chaos of artificial greed and power only for the purpose of artificial luxuries and sense gratification. This is but the life of dogs and hogs. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation purport of text 4, chapter 10, canto 1 of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter of departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka. Someone was sending a message about vegans. Asking about vegans. People that are against the use of milk. Of course, present day cows are not being properly protected. But they take it to the extreme where they consider that the cows are exploited or the cows are all being milked. But here we can see that the entire human society is organized according to a plan given by Lord Krishna. We have to accept the superior intelligence of Lord Krishna's plan. If the cow's milk is offered to Lord Krishna, then that cow is blessed in so many ways. In any case, the cow would take birth as a human in the next life under the normal course of events if the cow can die a natural death. But if the cow's milk is offered to Krishna, then the cow is even more blessed and can achieve a very high position for that. The human society is meant to be vegetarian and at the same time get their animal requirements, their animal fat, animal protein requirements from milk, from the cow. In return, the human beings protect the cows. Since there's the protection, if the cows aren't slaughtered, then it's not a exploitation. It's a very friendly cooperation. Just like the children, when they're in the house of the parents, they're expected to also clean their room and help in cleaning the house and preparing the food. That's not considered exploitation. That's part of the cooperative effort that a family has. So in the whole human society, the whole universal society or the world society, if we consider the animals also have their part. Certain animals are naturally domestic animals. And the cows have a very important part to play. Here, Srila Prabhupada, or here the Bhagavatam brings out as a symptom that the world is very happy, is that the cows are happy. It is something inconceivable for just a normal ration. But how, if cows are happy, the world is happy. But this is actually a fact. And when the cows in the world are happy, the people become happy. So therefore, it can't be left up to chance. You can't just leave the animals in the forest to be eaten by the wolves. The humans have to take a care to protect the animals and to see that they are properly fed, taken care of, cleansed. In reciprocation, the cows give good milk. The bulls are engaged in the practical work in the field. So you don't need all this artificial machinery for plowing. And life can be quite simplified and spiritualized. So somehow the cows are happy, two people become happy. When the cows are not happy, also people are not happy. So someone can do a study, but this is the Vedic index. One of the indexes. If the cows and the brahmanas are happy, it means the kingdom is successful. The brahmanas should also be happy. If the brahmanas are not happy, then a king was considered to be a failure. So one historical story how one brahmana was dissatisfied with a particular king. He said, "I don't feel protected. I don't feel that this king is giving proper protection to the brahmanas. I'm going to leave this kingdom." And the king pleaded, "Please don't leave my kingdom. What can I do?" He said, "Well, I'm leaving because I just don't feel protected." He wouldn't even tell the king what was wrong. And he went to another kingdom, and the king said, "Why have you come here?" He said, "I don't feel protected by that king." "You what? You don't feel protected by that king? We are declaring war against that king. He is not protecting the brahmanas, therefore he is not qualified to be a king. Forward, troops!" And the whole army goes out because, "Why are you declaring?" "Well, because you didn't protect that brahmana." "What did I do wrong?" Couldn't figure it out. And they had a huge battle. In the end, that king was defeated, and the other king became the king of both kingdoms because he was not able to keep his brahmana satisfied. Therefore, he lost the grace of being that king there. Didn't affect the ordinary people. They went on with their daily activity. Just the kings fight against each other. So it was so important that a brahmana be kept happy, that the whole king, the whole kingdom changed his government just because one brahmana was fried out with the king. So here anyway, governments are changing every 4 years, but the brahmanas are always dissatisfied anyway. The Mother Nature is the energy of the Lord. And everything is being organized very systematically. We can see now that just a slight bit of change in the natural balance creates many changes. We were just recently in Poland, they say now because the temperature doesn't get quite as cold as it did before in the winter, that there are many kinds of insects and microorganisms which are not being killed because the winter is not so strong. Then in the summer, there's more flies, there's more types of diseases coming around. Just because a few degrees temperature changes, all of a sudden there's all types of ecological changes going on. So that in the world, there's different types of balances, different types of arrangements, which everybody just takes for granted. And now because due to the over-industrialization, so many forests and things are being cut down that so many different problems are coming up in the world due to the emissions. In South America, we were there, there's a huge hole in the ozone. And the ultraviolet rays are coming down on the people directly. Cows are going blind in the field because of the direct ultraviolet rays in the south of Argentina and Chile. People have to wear super sunglasses, otherwise they'll also go blind. because she had to put sunglasses on the cow's tuna.
Also here.
There's also ozone here in the north, in Sweden. Now in the winter or in the summer?
No, it's developing.
Developing. Progress. It's the Holy Land. So, all these things, now human beings are becoming aware that, well, there seems to be some kind of a natural balance. Of course, they don't give credit that this whole intricate balance was created by somebody. That this has a plan or intelligence behind it. Now that we're messing it up, we're thinking it takes so much effort, so many big world conferences, and Rio de Janeiro, they had a big conference, they're continually having regional and continental conferences, and they can't, you know, it's so difficult to try to organize things. But the whole world was organized in such a very nice balance, but I think that's all accidental. So Srila Prabhupada here in this verse has very boldly pointed out the defects of the modern godless civilization. How the materialistic civilization has created so many problems. The people should admit that this type of a system has got its inherent defects. That the present way of life is not the standard that we need to be headed in. One newspaper, one of the star newspaper reporters in one of the cities in Poland in an interview, and she kept raising this point that, well, people say you're a sect, you're a cult. And I was asking, why do you say that? What is your definition? Well, but do you dress differently? A lot of people dress differently. The Pope dresses differently. <See a cult? laughs> Well, but you eat differently. So anything is different from their standard. She was wearing a mini skirt, and if she went to India, she'd probably be stoned by people. They'd say, what is this lady doing without any clothes on? So here we're in the 20th century, but everything is based on very parochial, very limited vision. And what Prabhupada is trying to do here is shock a little objectivity into just accepting that the world we're living in is great. We should be objective and see the overview of what an ideal situation should be and then gradually work towards that. What is lacking is the blueprint of perfection or the blueprint of the ideal blueprint for the world. So Srila Prabhupada is providing that through his teachings here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, the underlying requirement or necessity is that people should also be spiritually progressive. Yudhishthira Maharaj was taking care that all the brahmanas were happy and there was a lot of preaching going on throughout the kingdom. Everyone was engaged in worshipping Krishna. That people should be devotees of the Lord. They should be engaging in the service of the Lord, and everything becomes very easy. The Deva Varnashram is based on the principle that everyone is a devotee of the Lord. And as a devotee of the Lord, they all be engaged in the Lord's service according to their nature. But because they're all devotees, they're all considered equal in that sense, or all in the transcendental platform. But according to their particular nature, type of work, they'll have different degrees of social responsibility and certain way of interacting. But not that it's a rigid type of caste system, where one is considered to be statutory higher, another lower, just a different role, a different function, a different responsibility for everyone, but everyone should be engaged in Krishna's service. right now what's happening is that people tend to go whichever way the wind blows. You know that example from India? Going whichever way the wind blows. Of the rich man and the and his servant, who was not the devotee, employee of the eggplant. You know that example? There was once like a small king or like a baron or something. He was a landlord called Zamindar. And he had his whole small police force and his whole crew that would collect taxes and give to the king. So he had a special secretary called a Gomashta. And he was the one who would carry out his instructions and his aides. One day he was sitting in his chair and his secretary was, whatever, the Gomashta was there sitting. And he asked the Gomashta, what do you think, what's your opinion? I'd like to know something about you. What do you think about potatoes? And the servant, the assistant said, well, potatoes, I'd like to know, my lord, what do you think about potatoes? I mean, after all, you are, what is my opinion, count? Who am I? But I want to know what your opinion is about potatoes. What do you think about potatoes? He was a very submissive assistant. Then the lord said, well, potatoes. I think potatoes are pretty good. Pretty nice vegetable. Seem to be a good production of potatoes in our area. Yes, sir, potatoes are wonderful. Potatoes are the poor man's feast. With a potato, you can fry it, bake it, boil it. You can prepare it alone, or you can have it with so many other varieties of vegetables. Potatoes are the best vegetable in the entire world. Potatoes do have their fault also. I mean, potatoes are a bit starchy. And they're not all that good, are they? Yes, my lord. Actually, you're right. Potatoes have got too much starch, and they're also creating blood sugar. Sometimes if you eat too many potato, it makes a swollen belly. And the children, sometimes they eat too much, it blocks up their entire intestine. Actually, potatoes are very bad. They're the worst. What do you think about eggplant? Sir, what do you think about eggplant? I want to know what you think. Quite good. Eggplants are good vegetables. Yes, sir, eggplants are wonderful. Just think, even an ordinary person, if he gets a very distinguished guest like yourself, he can fry up a little eggplant, a little puri, and give you a feast. You can make eggplant pakoras. You can have an eggplant with the tomatoes, with so many different varieties. Eggplant is a wonderful vegetable. Wonderful. No, but eggplant is sometimes it is getting some itching in the skin or something. Oh yes, yes, my lord. Eggplant. Actually, eggplant has got too many seeds. And eggplant, if you take too much, yes, it creates some skin disease also. And it also makes thin the vital ingredients of the body. So what do you expect? Eggplant is called in Sanskrit begun. Mane, no quality. It is just a watery thing. See, the eggplant is a very poor vegetable. You see, very bad. So what is the thing with you? If I ask you how potatoes are, you say, if I say they're good, you say they're the greatest. If I say, well, they're a little bad, you say they're the worst. And eggplant, the same thing. You don't have any personality yourself. Whatever I say, that you're just taking that point of view. Why don't you have your own opinion on eggplant and potatoes? Dear my lord, please you must know, I am not working for eggplants nor potatoes. They are not paying my salary. Why should I do what they want? I will do whatever you want. If you like potato, then I like potato. If you don't, I don't like. I'm working for you. So whatever you like, that's what I will do. Jai Nandani ka Giridhari. Jai Gora Nandani. Jai Giridhari. This is a problem today. The tears are falling on the leg of the Mayavadi Guru. So they say, what are you doing? I'm following this system of having an opinion, whatever the trend is, whatever everybody's thinking, whatever some scientist said, that people tend to fall in line. Some political leader or some movie star set out actually utilizing their own independent intelligence, and they tend to just follow. So that way we see in the society that just whichever way the opinion is, people are changed. Also in the religion, if the general population has got a particular opinion, any religion, they just fall in line. So the religions become almost a democratic process rather than something coming down from God. And naturally, in Krishna consciousness, that we're trying to maintain very strictly the Krishna conscious principles handed down from the Shastra, the people will challenge and try to get us to change. It's based on some popular sentiment. Then after some time the sentiment will change and other people will also change. So the Krishna consciousness has to be based on these books, based on the disciplic succession, not based on whichever way the wind happens to blow in the opinion. Now, before there was a lord, he was or a king, their opinion counts, and now the democracy, so what the public wants, that's what counts. If a majority of people feel one way, then automatically the people in power, they have to go in that direction. And so this public opinion is an ever-changing, really complex thing based on the newspapers and the scientific and intellectual, many different factors, and musicians and so on. Gradually public opinion changes in certain ways. Sometimes it might change for the good. Now there's a trend, an ecological trend, certain good trends are there, but who knows? At some point in time, again, it can just switch some other direction. And then again, everyone will run on that side. Rather than being servants of the truth, they're being servants of some illusory master. The Lord was wanting as a servant to give an objective opinion, something good or bad. But instead, he was just mirroring whatever the whim was of his employer. Whether it's a politician serving the people, or whether the people are whatever, but this tendency is there. We should understand that the great leaders like Yudhisthira Maharaj, they already had a very clear idea. He went to Bhishma Deva, ask him what his opinion was. He went to Lord Krishna. He wanted to know what their opinion was. He didn't go and take a referendum from the people. What was the public opinion, whether he did right or wrong? He wanted to know from authorities who knew the absolute truth, who knew the real standard of action, what is to be done, what is not to be done. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's also clearly mentioned that part of knowledge is to know, part of the mode of goodness, 18th chapter, is to know what is to be done and what is not to be done. That's what the brahmanas are there in society for, telling the people this is what is to be done, this is what is not to be done. So the Prabhupada wanted that the Krishna conscious devotees should provide this brahminical input to society. I mean, we have to be very clear on everything, what should be done and what shouldn't be done. And the brahmanas are also respected because not only did they say what should be done, but then they would also live according to those standards. It's a very big responsibility to to be a Brahmana. Because it's not simply spouting off a theory. It's actually having a clear idea of the requirements of society and then personally showing by example how to do that. The Srila Prabhupada wanted that the devotees should be well known as very honest, upright people in society. One of the effects we're seeing from the expansion of the congregational preaching in different parts of the world, where before devotees were kind of isolated, so they just felt like nobody was watching them. Whatever they were doing, it was just internal. But when you have a big congregation, the congregational members see, well, I saw that these are devotees from our temple. I saw them going into this store and buying that thing, but doesn't that have some meat product in it or in it? Or I've seen this devotee acting like that or doing my duty. All kind of reports come into the president from congregational members who are all pervasive, all around, expecting a very high standard of behavior from the temple devotees. The congregational devotees are looking up to temple devotees as brahminical figures, and they're putting a lot of pressure that the devotees in the temple behave in an exemplary manner. So this is one of the effects of congregational preaching. That effect was so strong when the whole society was the congregation of Krishna, the whole society was devoted to Krishna, that they would be very demanding in what they expected from a brahmana or a king. Everyone knew what the standard was. And if someone wasn't living up to that standard, then people would be dissatisfied. Of course, there wasn't big movements, but that pressure was so strong from all the sides that automatically people tended to fulfill that standard. The tendency was there. So much so that the king just had a belt. That if anyone in his kingdom had a complaint, they could go and ring the bell. There was that famous story how the bell was ringing and nobody even knew what was that sound. They never heard the bell. It was there, but nobody ever had a complaint. There was never any complaint. I mean, what is that sound? And they said, and then they brought in, it was a Brahmin, and he was complaining that what kind of kingdom is this? My sons have died before I did. So then Krishna took Arjuna, and they had to find the departed son. Yamaraj was keeping. Anyway, that the king was so responsible that nature, the order of human life, became regulated because the king and all the citizens, they were following the orders of Krishna. Now, we're so far off from that. I mean, it's nothing for our children to die before the parents. There's nothing unexpected anymore. Everything is totally in a disorderly state. And if you hear that everything was so orderly, whether even the life and death, all these things were happening in such an orderly manner, people know this must be a mythology or something. How could it possibly be like that? How is it possible? But it was like that. It was so orderly that when we consider the present state of affairs, it's almost inconceivable. But we could, since it's so inconceivable, nobody would even have written it. It didn't happen. and they made that they're not subject to this cheating or this mistake. They're writing what is the actual standard. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came in the midst of this Kali Yuga to bring us the Harinama Sankirtan so that people in this dark age of Kali can get the light so that they can get back to Krishna. Lord Chaitanya, although he started off as a very argumentative Brahmana and scholastic genius and everything, when he began his Sankirtan movement, then he also became the perfect example of a Vaishnava. When he, after taking his initiation, he came back and he went down to the Ganges, to the Brahmanas before you, when he was a small child, used to spit the water on them, take their clothes and hide from one place to another, mix the boys and the men's clothes with the women's, and so on, creating all kinds of disturbance. Now he was humble Vaishnava, and he was helping the elderly coming out of the water. He was taking their clothes and folding it up and handing it to them. Some people were a little too old. He helped them get back to their house. He would plead with all the brahmanas that I wasted my life. I wasn't Krishna conscious. Please give me your blessings that I can be a devotee of Krishna, that I can have pure Krishna consciousness. The different brahmanas were giving him blessings. He would plead to get a blessing. So, may you be empowered to neutralize all the demonic influences of the world. May you be empowered to spread the Harinam Sankirtan to every town and village of the whole world. Someone else, may anyone who chants your name be able to get love for Krishna, or whoever follows you, or something like that. They would all give like these wonderful blessings, how he would neutralize demonic influences, how he would spread the Harinam. So here Lord Chaitanya was approaching all the brahmanas and getting their blessings. Although, of course, the Lord, he doesn't need any blessings. He is the supreme powerful. Still, he showed how even the devotees, they should want to get the blessings from the senior Vaishnavas so that they can engage effectively in their devotional service. Remember how Srila Prabhupada was sending someone to do some special mission, preaching in some dangerous place. He would call in all the sannyasis and senior devotees, and he would ask them, give this preacher your blessings. He's going to do this very difficult preaching mission. He's going to Middle East, in those days, of course, the Soviet Union, or to do a special library book distribution program in some amazing part of the world, opening up a new field. When he was sending Srila Hari Goswami Maharaj to come to Northern Europe to start leaving Mayapur in his personal service, take up a publication, a distribution. So Hare Krishna didn't want to go. We wanted to leave Srila Prabhupada's personal service. So Prabhupada insisted. And then later when he came back with the book, I remember he presented the book to Srila Prabhupada, and the Prabhupada was just gloomy. So he didn't want to go, but see, because he went, how much wonderful things have happened. So carrying out the instruction of the Guru, getting the blessings of the Vaishnavas, all these things were being demonstrated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally. He personally took care of all the different devotees in this way. So he gradually started when he would read in the evening, chanting. Of course, you know that in the beginning, when he was chanting, people didn't understand it. They didn't understand about his chanting. Mother Sati was looking for Lord Chaitanya, and then the neighbors would start saying, "Oh, something's wrong with your son. You know, he's gone a little mental, you know, a little disturbance in the air." Just say it like some vayu dosh. It seems that You know, he's jumping and dancing and falling on the ground or something. There's a little displaced maybe in the hairs of the body. Yes, I think you should give him some tender green coconut, some dog water. This will cool him down. Another neighbor said, what will dog water do? He needs some oils on the brain to cool his brain down. Some nice Vishnu oil with 10 roots from Ayurvedic plants. No, I think that it is much more serious than that. Mother Sati, you should tie him up in your house. Don't let him out. Until he gets cured from this, you shouldn't let him out. And Mother Sati had to hear all these people. So let me just, I just want to find my son. Onimai. Onimai. Mother Sati, she just doesn't listen to our good advice. Then finally everybody was accusing Lord Chaitanya of being a little crazy or sick, some kind of illness, they would say, think it like that. So finally Lord Chaitanya went to Srivast Thakur and he asked him, Srivast Prabhu, can I just ask a question from you? You are very senior Vaishnava, you know about the science of Krishna consciousness. Please tell me whether it means. And I ask you a question. Oh, sit down, please, come in. What is it? What would you like to know? You see, ever since I took initiation, I've been chanting. Some strange things have been happening to me. And sometimes tears are coming in my eyes, and my hairs are standing on, and sometimes jumping, and just so many things are happening. So what's happening is that the general people, they're saying that I've got some disease. And I want to know whether this is true, whether actually I'm now diseased or not. So Srivast Thakur, he was very grave. He said, yeah. You have a very serious disease. Why don't you tell me about it? Concerned to hear that. And then Srivasa cracked a smile and said, I want that disease too. Then Lord Chaitanya, he knew he was like joking. You have a disease of love for Godhead, Krishna Prema. I thought for a minute, he said I had a disease. I'm saying, I'm just going to go to the Ganges and throw myself in the water. What is the sense of living if so much happiness, so much spiritual bliss, or so much bliss that I was feeling, it's all just an illusion. And why live? Other than there's nothing to live for anymore. You saved my life. Then you might, what you have, it's so rare, so wonderful, the love that you have for Krishna, that even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they want that kind of love. But the general people, they can't understand it. That's why they're accusing you. But you should come in my house. We have a nice garden. You can come just with the intimate devotees who won't misunderstand your ecstasies. And we can have a little private kirtan. The devotees will love it. They want your association. They want to be able to chant with you. So I invite you, please come to my garden and we can have a good time here. We'll only let in people who will not misunderstand. So that's how the nocturnal kirtans and Srivast Pandan began. Because people were so square. They couldn't understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstasy. So they started off just in private first time. The devotees were having their ecstatic kirtan. Then after some time, Lord Chaitanya, he brought the kirtans out again to the street and flooded the whole of Navadvip. By that time there was enough momentum to sustain. So this chanting of the holy name is a limited powerful influence in the world. Wherever Krishna is present, Krishna Surya Samabhaya Amrita Jahakrishna Tahamaya Mahi Adhikar. Wherever there is Krishna's presence, there is no place for Maya, no place for the ignorance. So the Krishna Consciousness Movement is to bring Krishna into the world. Krishna doesn't incarnate openly in Ace of Kali, and after Lord Chaitanya left, and the devotees are very concerned, how can we have your presence? We can have his presence through the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. We also know from the Srimad Bhagavatam that Lord Krishna said that he would be present in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam. As the Srimad Bhagavatam. So through the chanting of the holy name, through the Srimad Bhagavatam, through the holy scriptures, the Lord is still present in the age of Kali. But how many people are being exposed to the holy names or to the sacred books? That's how many people are getting the contact with Krishna. The more regularly, the more consistently that they get this association. Of course, the devotees of the Lord also carry Krishna in their heart. So they need this association from the devotees, from the books, from the holy names. And the more that they get in contact with Krishna, automatically it awakens their own spiritual mission. Material nature is very powerful. It can cover the intelligence of even very great personalities. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was actually the guru of the devas, Brihaspati. He wanted to be the teacher of Lord Chaitanya. So he took the risk of incarnating as a human being in Navadvipa to be the teacher of Lord Chaitanya. But when he took the human body and he was in Navadvipa when there were so many Mayavadis, there's so much karma kanda, that he got bewildered and he forgot what he came for, and he went down to Jagannath Puri and he became the guru of the Mayavadis. So if you take a human body, you're very susceptible to the whole social environment. That's why it's important that Prabhupada created a society of Krishna consciousness to give us a spiritual environment, a spiritual society. We can associate with devotees and have that type of positive influence on ourselves, and we can also give that association to others. Of course, by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, he didn't forget why Brihaspati wanted to come, or why he came. So when he went to Jagannath Puri, he personally went and took instruction from him, and then he delivered him. But Eva takes birth in this world because he can get bewildered what to speak of or anybody else. Krishna needs to be given and spread everywhere so people can actually have that spiritual vision, that they can get out of this illusion. What takes to be one thing actually turns out to be something else. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used the example that sometimes a person was sitting in a train, maybe doze off to wake up and then see that the villagers are racing towards him. The one very simple person, first time he took a ride in the train, he's sitting in the train, and he said, look at the train isn't moving, but all the villagers are running to us. It's like an optical illusion that instead of realizing that he was moving and going towards the villagers, he thought the train is not moving, it's the villagers are running towards me. Now that's what the picture that Srila Prabhupada is painting here in this purport. is everyone is thinking in the modern society we're making tremendous progress, we're going forward. But actually they're standing still and they're seeing everything go by. And in actuality, they're not making progress, but it's the opposite. This is a reverse illusion. They think they're going forward, but actually it's like sometimes you're in a flight train. You think you're going forward, but it's actually another train that's going by you. They're just seeing, you think you're moving, but it's when you look down at the track, you see you're not moving, it's the other train that's moving. But actually they're seeing the whole civilization going down the tube so fast, they think that they're going forward. They don't have it. What's the perspective? What do you look at? Like you know, you're in a train, you don't know if I'm moving or they're moving. You have to look down at the track. You have to look at something that doesn't move.